thanks so much for these two incredible talks. I cannot resist but try to draw, but kind of try to draw them closer to each other. And this is why I will begin with a complicated question to you, Dharam. Because you made that comparison, or you mapped onto each other yin yang and the SO function. And if we see the SO function as part of that metamorphic onto escapology, escapology that Tom has introduced, and I think in doing so, bringing up a crucial question of namely how its status has changed due to the political circumstances, how what one could do with it, what investing in it meant itself has changed because the ground has changed. So I wanted to begin, I wanted to ask you whether it is, whether you see yourself capable of maybe doing something like that, of tracing what the concept was good for, what that central Chinese philosophical concept was used for in this harsh, difficult 20th century. So, say, from the May 4th movement to the present, but of course this is too much to ask, but since you began with the Mao quote, maybe you could sketch for us what this concept has been, what the political investment in this concept has been, for instance, at these moments of revolutionary upheaval, such as May 4th movement or the Cultural Revolution.
Well, indeed, very complicated question. I will try to say something. I think the kind of the starting point of my interest in this concept and later develop it into this transdualism that I see a lot of kind of echoing the SO function is a response to a kind of blind spot in critique, in the very mode of critique. When we critique something, it seems always there is an either-or kind of, it reproduces again the either-or kind of logic. In kind of scholarly, in the marketplace of scholarship, let's call it, successionism. So you have endless these turns, right? But as I showed here, when we actually look back into the 30s, at least in sinology, I don't know the in ethnography, it seems to be another case, but it was not dated. There is no turn there to be made. Instead of moving out, let's say moving kind of out of a overdetermined situation, I'm thinking more of what can be done from within, like how the thinking itself kind of debunk itself, or how the trope I used when I was at the ICI is how the penis defies the phallus with the urethra, with the hole, that it's very function, right? So maybe I didn't answer your question specifically to the political moment, which I don't think I can say anything concrete there, but I think it's a kind of or in the way that for example the May 4th was an immensely either or moment that they want to destroy everything Chinese, and this aspiration. Yesterday Joyce and Sylvester's discussion kind of moved a little bit on this direction of especially Sylvester. I think he said there's this aspiration, like aspiration become the European subject as the response to the crisis there, right? But it clearly won't work in that way.
Yeah, so the very, what you're saying is that something like the origins of radically modernizing China was based on a kind of antagonistic structure, iconoclastic, as it's also referred to, no? And radical break with the past, etc.
Which was repeated in the 60s. Right?
Which was repeated in the 60s, but wasn't there also elements in the Cultural Revolution that one could connect with the principle of change? Or was it all on the register of that sort of revolutionary antagonism?
I think the concept of change there is as in Yin Yang, is what François Julien calls the silent transformation. Mm-hmm. It's not a radical break. I'm not denying there's necessity for the radical break, as there is necessity for obstruction, as what is happening today. But as a kind of critical reflection on what went wrong, let's put it bluntly like that, was precisely this antagonism that was so black and white that it does not communicate. So the hexagram, the Thai hexagram, is the great stability, right? Actually, you have earth on top and sky below. That's how they communicate. And immediately after that, you have the hexagram P, so that is the great obstruction. Then these two forces are reversed in the natural order of sky above and earth below, and then they don't communicate, and that's the great obstruction.
So I get that, but I'm going to insist one more time. I just wanted to know whether you could try to sketch again for us what then, I mean, how do you see that in this reference to the I Ching, to the kind of silent transformation principle, how do you conceive of the how would that in your eyes become a political concept that is not, say, pacifying or holistic in the sense of creating or aspiring to? I understand your concept of the below, the dualism, is not an aspiration to wholeness, but a departure from, right? This is maybe a crucial difference. But still, I wonder, if that is the case, what is then a politics of that?
You mentioned a very crucial word, which is below, right? Not only there, the move below dualism, but also the kind of globalization from below. Things are happening, right? Things are happening from below that sustain the whole. So it is political already on the ground. I don't want to. I think it's more in a kind of feminist tradition that on one hand emphasize on the importance of de-essentialization, but on the other hand also insist on difference. And this is imminent. This is imminent, or maybe you can call it pacifying. But I want to I want to think through this this kind of imminent transformation to give the possibility in which those that stay below, that sustain the system, can be at least recognized. Was that?
I'd like to ask Tom if simply maybe to also bring your talk back onto the table, to whether you see yourself able to summarize perhaps what the conditions were that led Einstein to abandon in your reading of this what was the tectonic shift that made this metamorphic revolt and the particular eschatology attached to it suddenly seem in his eyes to be not only not the right thing to do anymore, but even identify it with capital?
Well, I couldn't say anything. I mean, I wouldn't like to speculate about any event that might have happened in Einstein's life or thinking. I mean, this is hard to tell, and I cannot really. I mean, why shouldn't he have the same thoughts already in the late 20s? When I mean, in terms of capitalism and the predominant role of finance and finance capital already was quite, visible and could have been theorized by him in the ways he did it later on. I think maybe a reason is that he had, in terms of vocabulary, terminology, knowledge, an enriched repertoire at hand. I mean, in terms of his, especially his ethnological knowledge and his knowledge of maybe of the of the writings of Marcel Mauss and others who he got to know in his Paris years, and more intimately, more closely. And that he was then able to do to make this transfer from thinking. I mean, using this discursive apparatus or this only in inverted commas to develop his theory of art, but extending and expanding onto other domains of historical criticism and historical materialism, that he was able to in a way apply a notion such as mana onto capital might have taken some time. And then why? Yes, well, the very anger inscribed or implicit in Fabrication der Fiktion, making this text such a committed and difficult to read one, and such a repetitive one, is I think the very blame he put on himself and the liberal intellectual to not have been able to prevent fascism to rise. And the dating of Fabrication der Fiktion we just talked about the other day is kind of shifting momentarily. I mean, with letters he with the fact that he sent Mark Haxthausen told me that he sent the manuscript of Fabrication to Fritz Sachse in 1934 So that's after 1933, and after the Machtergreifung, and this might have been one of the caesura to take into account here. But what I would like to add to what you just discussed I've also thinking about this, about my talk, but also about yours, Sarong, is what is really the relationship between a history on the one hand and temporality on the other, and how temporality or notions of temporality, modes of temporal thinking or temporal practices are changing historically, and what is the historicity of the temporal and of particular temporal practices. And I was thinking about this because when Einstein speaks about the primitivization of large parts of society in the early 20th century, and in particular addressing or particular attending to the rise of the working class movements and the Bolsheviks, that he is in a way trying to and does a similar thing with the liberal bourgeois, that he tries to explain in a way a kind of transformation in temporal terms, and also at the same time is kind of historically marking them as only having been possible at a particular moment. And this reminded me of Pasolini's Pierpaolo Pasolini's notion of the anthropological transformation he kind of observed in Italian society, the post-war Italian society, between the in a way paleo-industrial proletariat and the consumerist part of society. That there's that you can actually observe a change, a transformation within a particular period, which cannot be taken away from this period. The same transformation couldn't have happened in the 1920s. There are other a different terminology had to be used, like primitivization or regression, as Einstein called it, and this kind of particular anthropological transformation or that Pasolini observed in the 60s and 70s. So this, so I was wondering whether the notion of with your notion of transdualism or transdualist projects in their historicity have what temporal dimension might be in there, or is it all about detemporalizing those processes?
I agree with what you were saying, but I think on the other hand, or what I'm more interested in this concept is who or what was able or was left outside of the historical overdetermination. For example, yesterday I feel like there was a consensus that the ethnography that produced in the 30s are no longer relevant, kind of passé, right? but actually, certain areas that doesn't age, and they remain quite like the Carnet's book. It's still a very important reference in sinology, in European sinology. So they are kind of these examples of that they are not a product of their time, and of course in let's say in queer theory it talks a lot about how different from the queer kind of position, how different temporalities can be traced, or they are kind of outside of this major narrative, yeah, of that age, right?
I had to think about notions such as a temporal drag, which Elizabeth Freeman came up with. The idea of touching different times across time. I mean, and developing a non-linear, a queer notion of temporality, which isn't longer, which isn't anymore part of a kind of notion of history that is based on notions of production and progress.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's yeah. something going on. But shouldn't we open?
We have a few minutes left for questions. If you want to, please join this conversation. Mark? Oh, sorry, Joyce first. So we'll just go with that.
So thank you for the talks. I felt that they were very inspiring and made me think a lot of things. There is this notion of fusion, metamorphosis and mixing. I mean, Zairong, you ended your talk with gazpacho. There's also this question of métissage, right, which we also see as a phenomenon we see in a lot in colonial conquests and cultural métissage, which I think stands to be thought of as a little bit different than fusing, right? And then the key term, I think, in the 30s, European interwar period, was heterogeneity, right? So I think I want to ask a question about numbers, because I think ultimately this is important. In the yin-yang diagram, it's an abstraction, of course. So we see the white and the black always in equal parts, exactly 50%, the other 50%, right? With the little small circle on each side, but then mathematically they come out even. So my question is really about, to what extent does this diagram serve to as a model for situations where we cannot expect 50%? The gazpacho's main ingredient is tomatoes, right? You throw in other things, breadcrumbs and cucumber and all those things, but it's very, very clear that in the end, it's tomatoes that dominate. So that's what it's called gazpacho, even the variations, you don't have to have this. So in the case, assuming that we agree that no thought is free of the risk of hegemony, right? Every thought can become totalitarian in some ways. I think one of the productive moments of European interwar intelligentsia, this avant-garde mode of thought, is this question of heterogeneity. So I think, when we think about the new global power of China and all this, right, we also have to think, I'm reminded of this poster of the 1931 colonial exhibition that the French had put on. And actually on the poster, they showed all the races, and this is a very happy picture of like yellow, brown, black, white people all mixing well, right? Under this, on this very nice multi-culti France. And then of course Paris is beaming its yang, its sun, its the light on the rest of the world. So there is the promise of mixing well under, a universalizing paradigm, right? And this is what Europe has struggled with since the 19th century. With Napoleon, this morning I was talking to Sven about this, the Napoleon was the universalizing force, so then it actually provoked all the German states to actually think about its particularity. And so I don't think we can, I wonder what you think when you have this, let's say in the Chinese, you talked about the number of, of Chinese speaking. Well, yes, at the same time, I suppose I'm a little, also aware that in countries that are actually multi-ethnic, right, you always have the risk. I mean, I live in and work in the U.S., American, so that's another form of universality. But when you have multi-ethnic, plurality of religions and all these things, how relevant is the, how do we think trans-dualism in relationship to that, when you actually have a kind of non 50-50% kind of, and right, you have who's the tomato, right? And so I think you have a lot of tomatoes in a lot of Chinese-speaking lands that would be represented by one language, right? And then the others might be the minority. So, you know, how does that, yeah. So,
so there's a kind of gazpacho that use watermelon as well. that's a short answer. So the longer answer would be if we go back to the classics, which for some weird reason I like to do. The in Tao Te Ching there is this famous sentence: Tao generates one, one generates two, two generates three, and three generates 10,000 things. And the 10,000 things embrace yin and carries yang, and it goes on, right? So there's this mysterious three that is really not talked about in Sinology, in Chinese philosophy. It's very much focused on this yin-yang dualism. But there is this three that enables yin-yang, this 50-50 kind of, let's call it dualism, to grow into 10,000 different things, into multiplicity, into heterogeneity. But after the numerology goes Wan Wu Fu Yin Er Bao Yang, so the 10,000 things carry in and embrace Yang. When the 10,000 things carry in and embrace Yang, it's no longer the idea that this group is black, that group is white, and then they fusion into 50-50. But is that each group, each 10,000 things has a share in this 50-50. This is one side, the classical side. The other side, I think what I want to pressure is not to pretend that we can just overthrow dualism at all. Like it functions in different corners. It even in the overthrow is a dualistic kind of gesture, right? So what can we do with that? Yes, that's what I'm going on. So the little dot in the symbol, right, is the orifice, right? It's the orifice. If we think of the body, the bodily orifice is where the other can enter us, right? and also where the self breaks, the kind of either ethnic, either religious, either cultural, kind of guarded border is actually break. Yeah.
We have time for a short question.
Just say very briefly, I think that ultimately what leads to the fabrication of fictions and Einstein's breakdown of his belief in the avant-garde is his increasing investigation of world art. And this is, runs through the prospectus and to the Handbook of Art, that he recognizes there's something anomalous about art and modernity, that it's really marginal to life, I'll cite this in my paper. It's the first sign in his published writings that something is beginning to bother him, and it's the text that isn't discussed very much, which was published in English, and that's the introduction to the gallery, to the exhibition of bronzes at the Storer Gallery in New York, which the Fanayun Vault's edition incorrectly gives the date of 33, but it's November 31. It's November 31. It's before Hitler and so forth. And so I'll read a quote. But I think as he increasingly becomes involved with world art and with the history of art, he comes to recognize that modernity is different. And the whole project breaks down for him.
Yes, I agree with, regarding the kind of the modernism or modernity and world art or globalized part of it, but I wouldn't see how the vanishing or how the different role of the SO function is being, I mean, how this transition is being affected by becoming disillusioned by modern art. I think the kind of main resource for coming up with a concept such as the SO function is already world art in a way, or is non-European art in many respects, but not only. It's also mathematics, it's biology, it's psychoanalysis, or his critique or his idea of psychology. And so the question is valid, I think, under discussion. Because this idea of a wholeness which is conflictual in itself persists in the also in the writings that lead to the handbook or the non-finished handbook project. So there are still traces of this idea of not really a fusion. It's a much more dialectical really tense concept. This concept of Akt Ganzheit, which is the in a way the wholeness after totality. maybe he didn't discard it really. It doesn't feature that prominently in the prospectus. But there is a certain, I mean, at least with Fabrikation der Fiktion, there's a decided refusal or the decided denial of this idea being a progressive one.
Thanks a lot for your talks again, for the discussion, and for your patience.